The U.S. is approaching its debt ceiling, but stocks continue to rally despite all the warning signs. I'm Graham Summers, and this is Bulls, Bears, and BS. Welcome back to Bulls, Bears, and BS. I'm Graham Summers, and today is Monday, May 22nd, 2023. We took a brief hiatus from Bulls, Bears, and BS for our quarterly corporate retreat, but now that that's over, let's address what's going on in the financial system today. The big issue that's over all of our heads, and that the market seems to not be paying any attention to, is the U.S. debt ceiling. Now, there's a lot of bad information about what this is and a lot of hysteria, so let's try and dial down to the actual facts. The U.S., for all its debt issues, is not allowed to just issue debt ad infinitum. There is actually a limit to the amount of debt that the U.S. is allowed to issue by law, and that limit is set out by Congress via legislation. Once that debt limit is hit, what it means is that the United States can no longer issue new debt to fund its liabilities or its costs. Instead, it has to solely rely on the capital that it has access to right at that moment. Now, this is actually a very complicated issue, and anyone who tells you, I have the exact date that this will happen, is lying. The people who are actually negotiating this, specifically Congress and the Biden White House, they don't even know the exact date at which the Treasury will run out of capital. The reason for this is that the Treasury has numerous accounts, and all of its funding is actually quite complicated. Even though it needs to issue new debt to fund liabilities, it has old debt that's coming due all the time. It has other accounts in which it has capital stowed away. So trying to narrow down the exact date at which a debt ceiling will hit is impossible. It's like trying to predict the exact day that a crash will hit the stock market in advance. You can't do it. Now, having said that, we're able to roughly ballpark what should happen based on the Treasury's general account and some of the other accounts that it's sitting on. And based on the money in that account, we're probably going to hit the debt ceiling sometime in the next 60 to 80 days. That's sometime in the beginning of July, possibly as late as August, although obviously that can move forward depending on how things progress. Now, again, if the U.S. hits its debt ceiling, that doesn't necessarily mean that the U.S. suddenly defaults and we have a systemic crash. It's definitely very jarring, specifically for the Treasury market, and that can be quite an issue because the Treasury market is the bedrock of our current financial system. But if someone's telling you that the U.S. hits its debt ceiling, that means we've defaulted, it means that like the whole world's going to end, that's not necessarily true. Moreover, it's not as if the political class is going to let that happen. Yes, they might come to a deal just 1 minute before it's too late, or they might even come to a deal 5 minutes after it's too late, but that's really negligible. As soon as the deal's reached, the issue is resolved. So anyone who's telling you that this is sort of some world-ending issue, that's not necessarily true. It is a big issue, it's a big risk, and the stock market is certainly not discounting that risk appropriately. But this is not the sky is falling, the end is near kind of stuff. At the end of the day, nobody in Congress or in the White House wants the U.S. to default because that becomes a major talking point for their opposition in the coming elections, and so some sort of deal is going to be reached. Now, the current deal that's currently being negotiated is as follows. The Republicans have presented a plan in which they're going to cut spending by about $100 to $150 billion next year. The overall cuts will be much larger. It's in the trillions of dollars, but it's important to note that the deal specifically states that none of those cuts will really kick into effect until at least 3, if not 5 years from now. So anyone who says that the Republicans are trying to cut all this spending and that it's this horrible thing, it's going to crash the economy, that's a load of BS. What the Republican plan actually says is that it will cut probably $100 to $150 billion in spending next year, and then all of the really big cuts happen 3 to 5 years from now. And honestly, they're probably going to renegotiate this thing or find some way around that later. Why do I say that? Because if there's one thing we know, it's that politicians are good at spending lots and lots of money, and that the general trend for this world economy and for this government over the last 40 years has been spend, 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 and there's never really been a time in which they're aggressively cutting or being careful. Now, on the flip side of it, the Democrats don't want any kind of cuts whatsoever. So let's actually look into these cuts that are being proposed. The current plan, if it's $100 to $150 billion in cuts, well, what is that? That's like 0.4% of GDP. That's a very small cut in government spending. And it really doesn't really account for much. I mean, it's something, but it's not 1% or even 3% of GDP. Again, it's 0.4%. So everybody running around saying, pointing fingers at the other side, saying they're trying to do this or they're trying to do that, and it's this big issue, and if we don't get what we want, it's the end of the world. That's a load of BS as well. At the end of the day, what we have is a situation in which the U.S. has been running up debt for decades. We routinely run into the debt ceiling and we get these kinds of bizarre standoffs where one side does something and one side does the other. And really, at the end of the day, a deal's made and nothing really changes. The government goes back to spending a ton of money. The far bigger issue as far as the United States is concerned is that it now has $31 trillion in debt and interest rates are far higher than they were in the past. 2 years ago, the U.S. could issue short-term T-bills or treasuries that mature in less than a year, and it was paying 0.25 to 0.5% on that stuff. Now it's paying 4% or even 5% on it. You see where that becomes an issue. It means it's a lot more expensive for the U.S. to issue debt, which means it's a lot more expensive for the U.S. to finance that debt, which means more and more money is going to go towards paying off interest payments on the debt, and eventually the U.S. runs into an issue where it just doesn't have the money. At that point, it either needs to continue to issue more and more and more debt exponentially in the debt markets, or our central bank, which is called the Federal Reserve, or the Fed steps in and has to start buying this stuff. And in fact, if you want to think big picture about everything that's happened since the tech crash of the late 90s, early 2000s, the Federal Reserve has essentially been financing our debt and our debt interest payments to a greater and greater degree. If you go back to 2007, the Federal Reserve's balance sheet was about $800 billion in size. It's now well over $8 trillion. So we've seen a tenfold increase in the Fed's balance sheet, and that's been because the Fed's been printing new money and using it to buy assets, specifically U.S. government bonds and mortgage-backed securities. So we're doing kind of a slow-motion nationalization of our debt markets via our central bank. And the reason why this ultimately led to inflation is when we shut down the economy, the Fed printed like $5 trillion in the span of 2 years. The government over the same time period printed and stimulated something like $6 trillion for a total of $11 trillion in money printing in the span of 20 to 24 months. To put that into perspective, if you add up all the money that the U.S. has ever printed in the history of its currency, 40% of it was printed after 2020. So that's why we're in this mess today. Now let's go back to that debt ceiling issue. As you know, I believe that there's going to be some kind of deal. In fact, there has to be, because nobody's going to want to be the person who caused the U.S. to default and cause systemic duress. So there's going to be some kind of deal made. What happens after that is key, because the U.S. Treasury currently needs to issue about $1.2 trillion in new bonds in the next 3 to 6 months. Remember, we already have $31 trillion in debt, and that stuff's coming due all the time, but we're also running a deficit, meaning that we're not able to finance our current liabilities and costs based on tax revenues, so we're having to go to the bond market and issue more debt to finance this stuff. This all started with the COVID lockdowns when we started running a $3 trillion deficit. It's now about $1 to $1.2 trillion. So the Treasury is going to have to issue a lot more debt, first of all, to refinance old debt that's coming new, and second of all, to finance this massive deficit. What this means is that we're about to see a huge supply of debt coming to the markets in the United States. And the bond market's fully aware of this, which is why bonds are starting to sell off. When bond prices fall, bond yields rise. And remember, the yields on these bonds represent the risk-free rate of return against which all risk assets, including stocks, are priced. So we have two big kind of issues facing the stock market today. One is the stock market is acting as if there's not even going to be a remote hiccup in the debt ceiling discussions. And the number two one is that the stock market is completely ignoring the fact that a massive amount of U.S. debt is going to have to be issued in the next 6 months, and that's going to force bond yields higher, which means that risk assets need to be repriced lower. Now, I want you to keep all of this in mind when we look at what's happening in the stock market today. Over the last 6 months, stocks have been consolidating. The lows for the current bear market hit in October of 2022. And since that time, we've been in this chopping range back and forth. The reason we've been in that chopping range is because the bond market stabilized around that time, because the bond market began to believe that the Federal Reserve would be doing enough to tackle inflation. Up until that point, bonds had been selling off aggressively and yields had been rising because of inflation, and the bond market was waiting for the Fed to play catch up. October of 2022 comes, and the bond market finally believes that the Fed's really serious about this, and so things start stabilizing. And since that time, Treasury yields have been chopping back and forth in a range. This is why stocks stopped collapsing in October of 2022, and since that time have been consolidating. Now, recently, we've started to see a breakout to the upside of this trading range, specifically in the tech sector. The reason that is happening is because large tech accounts for the largest weight of the market index. When you talk about the S&P 500, you're talking about 500 companies, but they're not all weighted equally. It's not as if each one gets 1/500th of a weight. Instead, the large companies, specifically the large tech companies, account for a massive amount of market weight. The tech sector alone accounts for 28% of the S&P 500, and the large tech companies like Apple or Meta or Nvidia or Amazon, those, let's say, seven companies alone account for almost 21 to 22% of the stock market index's weighting. Because of this, when those companies rally, the overall market will either hold up well or even rally a little bit, even if the other 493 companies aren't rallying or doing as well. And that's exactly what's happening right now. And the reason that's happening is because the bulk of corporate profits is happening in the tech sector. Many other areas of the market are seeing significant earnings or profit drops year over year. Big tech is the only one that's really showing significant growth, or at least significant profit growth. Because of this, investors are piling into these companies, and the other reason investors are buying these things is because the large tech stocks have some of the most stable balance sheets in the world. Apple, Alphabet, Meta, these companies are sitting on tens of billions, and in some cases more than $100 billion in cash, and they don't have a whole lot of debt. Now compare that to the United States, which has almost no cash in its general account balance at the Treasury, and has $31 trillion in debt. So investors, for some reason, are seeing these large tech stocks as kind of a safe haven compared to the U.S. government. On one hand, it makes a little bit of sense because these are companies with products that everyone wants to buy and they have solid balance sheets. On the other hand, it makes no sense because no matter how volatile or crazy things get in the Treasury market, you don't ever see them drop 20% in a week. By way of contrast, it's really not unusual to see stocks or even the overall stock market move quite a lot, even in just a single day. Facebook, which is now called Meta, actually dropped almost 30% in a single week in early 2022. So this belief that investors have that big tech is somehow a safe haven is a little misguided, particularly when you consider that the U.S. government can always print money to pay its lenders back. By way of contrast, tech can't do that. So this is the environment we're in right now. So this is the big picture for the financial system today. The debt ceiling's fast approaching, and the stock market is not discounting any kind of volatility associated with that. Once a deal is reached, the U.S. Treasury is going to be issuing over $1 trillion in new debt in the span of about 6 months, and this is going to cause Treasury yields to rise as Treasury bonds sell off. And when those Treasury yields rise, we should see risk assets, specifically stocks, being repriced lower. However, investors in the stock market are ignoring that primarily because they're piling into large tech companies because they believe those companies are a safe haven due to their solid balance sheets, and because those are one of the few areas of the stock market in which we're seeing profit growth right now. There's also one other issue here, which is the artificial intelligence or AI revolution, which is causing a bubble in certain segments of the stock market, which, you guessed it, it's big tech. Artificial intelligence is the latest sort of technology craze that has become a narrative for investors as something that's going to revolutionize the world. We've had this numerous times in the last 20 plus years. We've had it with the internet in the 90s. We had it with the cloud in the mid-2010s. We've had it with crypto. New technologies come around all the time, and there's initially a phase in which it's very difficult to quantify the actual economic and profit benefits of that technology. During those times, you usually see investors completely enter a mania phase where they start pricing things at absolutely ridiculous levels based on this idea that there's almost infinite growth. Consider the artificial intelligence revolution right now. That has currently accounted for all of the stock market gains year to date in 2023. What I mean by that is, if you remove the price action of the companies that are associated with artificial intelligence, the overall stock market would not be up thus far this year. However, it is up 8%. And in some of the more egregious examples, consider NVIDIA. It's a graphics processing company based in California. It's a big tech firm, and because it's considered to be key to the artificial intelligence revolution, its share price has more than doubled this year already. It's currently priced at a price to sales of 26 times and 180 times earnings. Now, to give you some perspective on that, at its absolute peak during the tech bubble of the late 90s, NVIDIA was priced at less than 10 times sales. It's now priced at 26 times sales. What that means is that if you buy NVIDIA at current prices, even if the company is able to translate every single dollar in revenues to profits, which is impossible, every company has costs, but even if it could do that, it would take you 26 years to break even on the deal. That's how egregious the artificial intelligence bubble is right now. And it is a bubble, and that bubble is going to burst. And when it does, the market's going to lose one of its most key growth areas, which is what's holding everything up. Now, I'm not saying that when this happens, we're going to get some spectacular market crash, and I'm not saying there's some black swan systemic event around the corner. What I'm saying is that the market is currently not pricing real risks, and it's also being driven by a narrative that is not based on reality. Indeed, we're seeing quite a number of disturbing divergences developing in the stock market. A divergence occurs when two assets that typically trade in tandem or together start to diverge from one another. And this divergence is usually resolved one way or the other. Either the asset that's outperforming declines or the asset that's underperforming plays catch up. Now, we're seeing divergences everywhere in the markets right now, specifically in things where big tech is going up, but everything else is not. If you consider the retail ETF, it's 90 retail companies that are based throughout the world. And it's generally considered a decent proxy for the U.S. consumer. Well, the retail ETF is trading down near the October 2022 lows. It hasn't participated at all in the rally that's occurred in the last couple of months. And the entire stock market's full of similar divergences. If you compare, say, luxury retail in the form of Moet, Louis Vuitton, or Ferrari, or companies like that, to the overall strength of the consumer, whether it's the retail ETF or some of the credit card companies like Visa, there's this huge divergence where the luxury end is skyrocketing and everything else is really flat or hasn't really moved much since the October 22 lows. There's more divergences than that. High yield credit, which is sometimes called junk bonds, typically lead stocks. It's underperforming. The S&P 500 is well above the high yield ETF. Similarly, the S&P 500 is also above the New York Stock Exchange's breadth, which is should be the other way around. Typically, breadth leads the overall market. And we're also seeing things even in the tech sector. Tech stocks typically trade in line with inflation-adjusted treasuries, which are a type of treasury bond the government issues that's supposed to trade in line with inflation. The reason these two things tend to tie to each other is because tech is a long-duration asset. What I mean by that is tech companies usually are unprofitable for quite a while, and then eventually the cash flow generation starts. So they typically are priced based on what a 10-year treasury or something of longer duration is being priced at. Now, inflation-adjusted treasuries are currently not participating in this rally in the way that tech stocks are. There's a big divergence between these two. And this is a very historic relationship. In fact, it's sort of suggesting that this move in tech stocks higher isn't really to be trusted. So my point with all of this is that I'm a little wary of this rally in the stock market right now. There's a number of real, quantifiable, or significant risks that are on the horizon, but stocks seem to be completely ignoring them. Now, assuming the stock market can get through the debt ceiling, the treasury issuance, and all these divergences are fixed with the underperforming assets playing catch up, there are some good indicators that the stock market's finding some decent stability here. The 200-day moving average for the S&P 500 has begun to flatten out and is in fact even starting to curl up a little bit. This is a major indicator that intermediate to long term, the trend is starting to turn upwards, which is actually the first time that's happened since the bear market began in February, March of 2022. So that's a pretty significant development and one that we need to keep an eye on. You know that I'm generally a little wary of things right now, but this is a development that I have to take note of. At the end of the day, for all the risks and all the trouble you see in the markets, if the 200-day moving average begins to slope upwards, it's a significant sign that stocks are due for a longer-term rally. And that wouldn't be particularly unusual because bear markets don't have to end quickly. Historically, bear markets are only quick if there's a crash, meaning that there's an event that wipes out a huge amount of value very quickly. Those bear markets tend to bottom quickly. But if you look historically at things like the tech crash, which is actually a misnomer in name, it took 2 to 3 years for the bear market to end. And that's more like the environment we're in today as opposed to the environment of 2008 or the COVID 2020 crash. Thus far, this bear market has been extremely controlled. Stocks have simply been repriced lower based on the fact that treasury yields moved higher due to inflation and due to the Federal Reserve tightening monetary policy. The big issue for the stock market in the big picture is what happens when a recession hits. If a recession hits, then we should see stocks break down in a big way because earnings will roll over significantly. And if treasury yields stay where they are right now, the stock market's being priced at about 16 to 18 times forward earnings. But that's based on earnings not having recession. If a recession hits, which the bond market has been warning is going to be the case for something like 9, 12 months now, if a recession hits, then we can expect earnings to decline by somewhere around 25%, which obviously means that the denominator becomes a lot smaller in the price-to-earnings ratio, which means that a 16 or 18 times forward earnings multiple results in a much lower price for the S&P 500. I realize that sounds quite complicated, so let's talk about it this way. Right now, thus far in this bear market, stocks have dropped down because treasury yields have risen. So if you can earn 0.25% or 1% on treasuries, you're willing to pay 20 or 22 times earnings for stocks. But if you're getting 4 or 5% in treasuries, you're only going to probably be willing to pay 16 to 18 times forward earnings for stocks. Now, we're talking simply about earnings. What happens if those earnings drop by 25%? Well, even if bond yields stay where they are, and the market continues to be priced at 16 to 18 times forward earnings, the earnings has dropped significantly, and consequently, that means that that forward multiple of 16 to 18 times earnings means a much lower price value for the market as a whole. So this is the big picture for everything right now. Bonds have stabilized. We're starting to see some positive developments long-term in the stock market, specifically with the 200-day moving average starting to turn upwards. But there's some really significant risks that indicate that bond yields might start rising again. And then at the end of the day, the key issue is whether or not a recession hits. The bond market has been warning of a recession for almost a year now. It has yet to manifest. We're all waiting for it to happen. Perhaps this time's a weird fluke. It's the first time since 1955 in which the bond market gets it wrong, but that remains to be seen. Overall, there's a lot to juggle here. It's a complicated time, and so it's a good time to be careful and not be moving aggressively into stocks. The time to move aggressively into stocks is when it's clear that the bear market has ended, and right now it's not really clear that that is the case. I'm Graham Summers, and this is Bulls, Bears, and BS.